Welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast, where business leaders come to share their advice and journeys to success with existing and emerging leaders of America. Join us as we delve into the minds of these accomplished individuals, uncovering the strategies and insights that have propelled them to the top. Whether you're an established leader or an emerging force in the business world, this podcast is your go-to source for the knowledge and inspiration needed to navigate the dynamic landscape of American business. Now, here's your host, Dylan Bloyd.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast. Today, we have the privilege of hosting a seasoned leader and expert in organizational development, founder of Franco.io Consulting, Eric Franco. With over two decades of experience and collaborating with Fortune 500 companies and other diverse companies, including USA Today Network, Raytheon, Chicanos Por La Causa, and more, Eric stands as a beacon of wisdom in navigating the complexities of leadership. Armed with industrial organizational psychology and the introvert HEAR HERE model, Eric uniquely addresses communication challenges with organizations. Recognized as a top Latino leader at the 2022 National Latino Leadership Conference, he brings a wealth of experience to the table. Eric is the author of The Introvert Ninja, and in his one-on-one executive leadership coaching sessions, speaking engagements, he offers tailored insights on talent development, policy changes, and effective communication. Get ready for an insightful conversation as we dive into leadership, talent development, and the intricate dynamics of effective communication with the one and only Eric Franco. Welcome to the podcast, Eric.
Oh, thanks, Dylan. I got to take you to some networking events. You could just introduce me from now on. That's I'm like, dang, who is this guy?
Right. Yeah. That's you. All the incredible things you've done.
It's, you know, you never really sit down and think about all the things you've accomplished. You're always just working on the next thing, right?
So yeah,
it's exactly. Nice to hear. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too. All right. So if you could please give us a brief background on yourself and how you got to where you are today.
So I always start off with husband and father of four. That's the most critical to me. That's the foundational thing, right? Those hit my core values. I've been, like you mentioned, doing the work that I do for a little over two decades, roughly. But my background, it kind of expands into retail, business management, program management, those types of things. And for a long time, I always thought it was just going to be program management, business management, retail type stuff. And what really changed it was maybe a couple decades ago, I got into a role and I chose the role because it was the best move for the family, right? Best income, best benefits, those types of things. And it's what I always did. Mm-hmm. And as a really strong introvert, I always let my work speak for myself. So, you know, put your head down, you do the work, you put in the effort and people notice, you get promotions, you get increases, you get all those kind of accolades, that type of thing. Well, the business I went into was super large. Like you became a number, you were a sea of pot, you know, little cubicles and those types of things. And so it was a very different culture, very different dynamics than what I've ever used to. And coming from where I did, where I always let my work speak for me, it wasn't good enough. Mm. And so I started to struggle because I didn't know how to make a place for myself, right? And then on top of that, now I say I had the fortune of having some really horrible managers at the time that criticized me, that just picked on people, that just were just horrible, horrible managers. They were not leaders at all, right? They would question everything you do. They would check into every, you know, thing you do. They would reevaluate everything you do. Just always just killing your confidence, killing your progress, killing your momentum. And that with the whole introvert piece and trying to figure out this new organization, it kind of caused me to have some anxiety, it caused me to have some stress, and I needed to step away from work for a while. Mm-hmm. And during that time is when I first actually said, you know, what do I want to do? What is it that I want to go and pursue? And as a result, this whole business psychology kind of came to be, right? I started talking to some schools about going back to school for psychology because it was always something of interest to me. And then I had a particular school reach out and say, you know, there is a business psychology with your background. Like it's a good mix as long as you enjoy that. And mm-hmm. I was like, I'd love that. Like I love the complexities of how organizations work and understanding priorities and, you know, bottom line initiatives and, you know, when to give, when to push, all those types of things. But then ultimately, I love the people side of it. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of married them together really well. And it gave me the opportunity to kind of really accelerate into what I was really supposed to be doing in my life. Right. I just didn't know it until then.
Gotcha. No, that's great. And one of the most important parts about that story is the fact that you took a step away from your business because of the anxiety and things that you were going through. And I think that happens a lot to people, you know, in the industry. And a lot of people don't show that on the outside, what they're going through on the inside. So the fact that you took the time to step back, really gauge what you wanted to do and help eliminate that stress is very, very important, because people just live through it. They don't look for help and until it's too late, you know, where they have a mental breakdown or any of those situations. In your book, do you talk about some things like that?
The book? Well, so the book is actually a children's book.
Oh, okay.
And I'll give you, so that particular book started as an adult theory. So I, like I mentioned, a strong introvert, right? And then I decided I needed to go back to school for business psychology. I started looking into, what does a business psychologist do? Well, they get on camera. They speak in front of crowds. They speak in front of big rooms, right? They meet with C-suite individuals, you know, vice presidents, all these different things. And as an introvert, I'm like, whoa. It made me, you know, realize, like, okay, if this is really what I love, I got to get uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I got to do things that I've never done before. And I got to learn how to flex into that extroverted style when needed. Mm-hmm. And so for about a year to 2 years, I tried a lot of different things. I was, you know, signing up for things. I was meeting with people. I was trying to pitch things in meetings. Like, I was just trying a lot of different things to try to figure out, how do I start to do this? It was very rough hazard, right? But over the course of that year, things started to hit, things started to line up, things started to work. And I started to realize what worked and what didn't work. So much so that people started to notice. Other people, right, that were like me, that gravitated toward me because we were all introverts, were like, hey, what's changed? Why are you able to do these things now when, you know, like, we've always struggled with this? And they were like, hey, can you coach me? So I started coaching them. And little by little, I kind of started to realize that there was this model that I used to coach them to do that, right? Mm-hmm. That's the HEAR model. And it's basically, you honor who you are, right? Your strengths, your capabilities, who you are as an individual. You're not trying to change yourself, those types of things. E is all about energy. So what creates energy, what drains energy? A is all about action. So it's nice to dream. It's nice to, you know, plan, but you got to put things in motion. Mm-hmm. And then R is about your review, like your after action review, what worked, what didn't work, how do we change, what needs to change for the next round, that type of thing. So it's very simple.
Yeah.
But based on that model, I was able to coach, like, I don't know, 20, 30 people within the next few years on that same model. They had tons of success, mm-hmm. right? So I started writing a book about that, and it's not done yet. It always keeps getting shelved,
right?
The adult version. And, you know, it's got stories and all that type of thing. But then 2020 hits, you know, later on. And we're at the house, right? You have kids. So my wife came to me one time. She said, the kids are driving me crazy. They're all up the wall, you know, up down the wall. They're bored. We can't go anywhere. We can't do anything. Like, we need something to keep them busy. And at the time, school was great, but it was all online and it was very short. Like, it wasn't uncommon to finish your day really early there.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, what can we do? And I started to think about, like, what's possible and what would benefit them, not just us, right? So my older two kids at the time, and still now, are very interested in graphic design, creative processes, those types of things. My younger two at the time were just, you know, they like stories, they read a lot, they watched movies, like, they just liked entertainment type things. And so I was like, you know what we're going to do is we're going to take this model and we're going to convert it to a children's book. And so I rewrote the book based on how to help a small child flex styles. Right. So thinking back to when I was a kid and I struggled to, you know, get friends, to do things, to do activities, to join the talent show. Like, there was a reason why I always decided to join the, you know, the pit crew and help just with setup stages and like that, because it was all behind the scenes.
Right.
So it then took that model and it changed it to a kid version. So like, when you talk about energy, like, for instance, for the adults, we talk about, like, what drains you, what, you know, what builds you up, like, what are the things that make you smile, stuff like that. But for a kid, we kind of converted it to, like, a gamification, like, hey, you're playing video games and you have to hit that apple to get more energy,
nice.
Right, to get more strength. And so then we just started to kind of build it through. So it's a children's workbook where the parent can kind of help walk them through these steps to help them feel comfortable flexing, right, to take action. The great thing about it is it became a family project. So my younger two kids helped with things like, where did this scene take place? Who's in it? What does it look like? What are the colors of the shirts? What room are they in? What are their names? Those types of things. My older two boys broke up the book and they illustrated it. And I took it as a project. So back to my project management days, like we put in schedules, we put in milestones, we put in like, here's what needs to happen when, and we followed up with them. Like, hey, I was supposed to see a page this Friday. Where is it? Like, why are you behind schedule? Yeah. Right. So it was an activity to pull everybody together. And over the course of it probably was 4 to 6 months. I'd have to go back and look. We were able to finish it off and then get it published and throw it on Amazon. Right. So it was never about like, I want to go and sell like thousands and thousands of copies. Like, does it add value? Yes. I've had, you know, medical professionals, teachers, and everybody else say it's been great, but it was a great family activity. It adds value to those that want to read it. And it put on their resume that they're published illustrators, And that's helped open up doors when they went into college and they started applying for grants and or scholarships and those types of things. Like, it's just a really cool thing that they can talk about when they go and talk to, you know, classrooms or in little networking groups or those types of things.
Yeah, I love that. I don't know if I've ever heard of a, you know, family kind of coming together on something like that and putting it all together. That gives them, the kids, so many lessons in business. I mean, in life, the fact that you're putting timelines on everything. I also love that you made it the model simplistic, you know, not just for kids, but for adults as well, because you hear of all these models out there that are so complex and it makes it so difficult to follow and you're trying and trying, but really the end goal is probably the same to what your model is. You know, it's just stick to it and it should
work. Same model.
Out. Yeah.
Right. I'm really big in if you create simplicity, you create sustainment. Mm-hmm. Right. So I studied psychology. I studied, you know, business psychology. I've seen those assessments where you have to have this huge binder as a key code to figure out of these 120 different options, what happens here? What happens here? Yeah. Right. And I'm like, it's just not something that can be done quickly and sustainably. So I'm always really big into like, how do we do this simply?
Right. Well, I love that. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. So in your experience, you've worked with entry level all the way up to C-suite level executives. So I'd kind of like to work our way up in this conversation from the bottom up, just so we can kind of share the advice and expertise in multiple different areas with the listeners. So on the ground floor of businesses, why is coaching so valuable and how do companies create a coaching culture?
It's a very good question. So the reason it's so valuable is because we don't know what's out there because we're stuck in it, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example for yourself or maybe a lot of your listeners. If you've ever like gone to a fall festival or a winter festival and there was a maze, mm-hmm. you start walking through the maze, right? You walk, you take a left, you hit a wall. You like backtrack, you go right, you hit another wall. You're like, oh, okay, I should have gone down the middle one. Then you do that. You keep hitting and like readjusting, rebacking up, those types of things. And so you're doing that, right? Mm-hmm. But then if you remember ever doing those mazes, you know, on a restaurant menu as a kid, in a book or anything like that, how easy it was to kind of work through it, right? Because you had that bird's eye view from the top down. Mm-hmm. Coaching is very much like that. It gives the ability of that top-down approach because they're not in the event. They're not the ones experiencing it. And so they don't have the perspectives of just seeing what's in front of them. They're able to see things differently because they come with additional expertise. And so by having that coach, it then allows them to kind of build out their perspectives, build out their capabilities, build out their understanding where they can make choices that are either a lot more streamlined, that are going to take them towards the right goals, right? Because a lot of times in coaching, the challenge isn't picking between, you know, the right choice and the wrong choice. It's picking between two or three right choices.
Right.
And how do you figure that out? And so that's why coaching is valuable because it gives a different perspective and it makes you think differently, mm-hmm. right? Within organizations and the value there, if you think about all the times in an organization where people question themselves, whether or not that they should be, you know, making a certain decision, right? The imposter syndrome component, they don't understand why they're not growing because maybe they're not getting really good feedback from their managers as to why they're not getting those new roles because mm-hmm. the manager is not comfortable giving that negative feedback,
right?
So coaching then creates this opportunity where it's like, we're here to be uncomfortable. We're here to grow because in uncomfort, you grow. Mm-hmm. And so it creates a space where you know you're going to get challenged, you're going to get questioned, not because of anything you're doing wrong, but because you're trying to get from A to B. Mm-hmm. Right. And coaching has been shown to have impacts on, you know, bottom line things like attrition issues, onboarding, leadership development, employee development, engagement, you know, competency, those types of things.
So when employees are being coached effectively on all levels, does that reduce negative attrition? And I guess while we're on the topic, what are some other tips to reducing attrition?
So it definitely reduces negative attrition. When I go into an organization, or when I look at organizations with really high attrition rates, and I've done this a few different times with organizations that have 20 plus, 30 plus attrition rates negatively, right? Mm-hmm. There's always somebody that says, okay, well, it's because we don't do X. But it's never that simple, right? There's a lot of complexities. There's a lot of things that go into why people are leaving. And I usually attribute it to three different main factors, right? Is this a structural thing? The organizational structure does not provide the opportunities for the individuals to develop, to grow, those types of things. Is it a cultural thing? People don't align to the core values. They don't align to the mission. They don't see eye to eye. They're kind of going different directions, right? There's ethics things that kind of go in there and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, is it the leadership thing? So do you have the leaders that are really developing people, that are creating space for them to grow and to do things, right? In my work with attrition, I've talked to a lot of headhunters, because I always like to get in the space of, you know, the everybody's head and go, okay, like, why are you thinking what you're thinking? Like, what causes you to go down A versus B? Mm-hmm. And I would always ask them the question, like, how do you know who to target? Or what are the types of people that create success for you when you target them, you know, on LinkedIn or wherever that is? And foundationally, what they all tell me is, I cannot headhunt a happy employee. Because if I headhunt a happy employee, they're going to be like, I'm happy. Like, there's no reason to even talk. Mm-hmm. I'm good. Right. Even if that other company could provide more money, I'm happy. And there's a lot of value to being happy. Now, if there's a slightest crack that they're not happy, now they're willing to have a conversation. Mm. And now then that creates the opportunity to kind of expand on that. So what I always talk to people about when they're talking about their attrition is like, okay, look at those three factors. What are your main drivers? Of those, what do you have control over? Maybe you can't be the most well-paying organization, but can you create a really high culture? Can you create really high leaders that offset that, right? Mm-hmm. And you could always do that. And I've been very successful taking organizations like under 5% negative attrition, mm-hmm. right? And again, simplicity, it's always going back to the model of, we want to make sure people are running towards an opportunity, not running away from something. Mm-hmm.
No, you're right about that. I mean, it's so competitive out there with the pay, you know, and I think that's where people really, really struggle. So trying to drive that culture is extremely important, and it's not easy to do, but models like yours that can definitely help these people out. And, you know, I've been noticing you saying leaders a lot, and I don't know if I've heard you say manager yet. So what are some key differences between leaders and managers, and how can we develop managers into leaders so they can begin advancing within their organization?
Yeah, not all leaders are managers, and not all managers are leaders, right? There is definitely a difference. A manager, and so I'll simplify it again. In my definition, a manager is responsible for the day-to-day management of X, right? There's mm-hmm. a component of a team. There's a component of the all the dues that you have to do as a manager, right? Did you do your performance reviews? Did you do your time cards? Did everybody, you know, complete X, Y, or Z, whatever that is? Mm-hmm. But a leader takes people into the unknown. Mm-hmm. They're an influencer, right? It's, if you think about any tough project, anything that's ever been accomplished that others say that couldn't be done, it was because somebody had a vision, right? They could get people to align to that vision. They could identify the strengths and the goals of those individuals and say, here's how those align to this vision. And here I'm going to help you get there to your goals in the process of you helping us get here, right? They're going to support them. They're going to engage with them. They're going to actually care about their people. And when you do those things, people will go anywhere with you, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we've all had great managers. We've all had poor managers. Mm-hmm. I know I've had my fair share of both, right? There are still managers I've had that if they called me now, 10, 15 years later, I'd still say, what do you need? Mm-hmm. Right? Because they instilled that caring component. And so really, if I had to simplify it, I'd say that the main component of the difference is, you know, do you care about the people and what they really want?
It's difficult to get behind, you know, those bad managers. And when you have those great managers and great leaders in within your organization, you'll do anything for them. You know, you'll go above and beyond. And especially like we talked about right before this with the pay, even if you're not being paid the highest, if you have somebody that you can get behind, you know, they have your back and you know, they are going to look out for you. You'll do anything for those guys. Earlier in the conversation, you mentioned imposter syndrome. When leaders are advancing within a company into executive level positions, especially like at a rapid pace, sometimes they suffer imposter syndrome. And what kind of impact does that have on an organization?
Oh, see, I love this topic. I've done a lot of research in this topic and even wrote a white paper. So it's amazing how many people struggle with it, right? And, mm-hmm. I know for myself, I've struggled with it. I'm guessing you have. Like yes. Pretty much any driven individual at one point or another questioned if they were the right person, mm-hmm. right? Questioned if they had the right knowledge, the right skills, the right abilities to do whatever it is, right?
Right.
And you're not going to get away from that, right? The way the brain works, the way the mindset works is it's there to help protect you. Mm-hmm. It's there to help you think of what could go wrong, to make you question so you can protect, right? But once you're in that mindset, it's really hard to get out.
Yes.
And so the impact that that has on an organization is if you think about it, if you have, let's say, we'll take a small number, 100 people in your organization. On a daily basis, I think it's like 70 to 73%, something like that. And I'm going off the top of my head, that have some kind of bout with imposter syndrome. Right. So 73 out of 100, let's say, of people. Of those 73, they might deal with it for 20 minutes. They might deal with it for a few hours. Now, if you're questioning yourself, if you're in that spiral, you're not productive. So you start to think of all the lost time, lost efficiencies, those types of things. Right. And again, this is a psychological thing. You're not going to necessarily get away from it, mm-hmm. but you can pull yourself out of it quicker. And there's multiple ways you could pull yourself out. So for an organization, that shows up in attrition issues. It shows up in employees not willing to speak up because they don't feel like they have the right to speak up and provide, you know, different opinions or solutions. So you lose creative opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. Intellectual property opportunities, those types of things. You're going to lose lost time. There's a lot of lost wages. Right. And those types of things. So there's a monetary impact. There's an engagement impact. There's a proficiency and efficiency, you know, impact, those types of things. And so if you could pull yourself out, you're going to be that much better than your competition or mm-hmm. the, you know, whatever stores down the street kind of thing, because now you're helping your employees instead of spending 2-3 hours in that spiral, they get out of it in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now you just gained 4.5 hours of efficiency.
Right. That's very interesting. I know I've experienced it myself, where I'm maybe a difficult situation comes up and I'm like, man, was I meant for this position? You know, especially early on. And then you have people questioning you, you have people coming at you every which way. And it does cause you to kind of put up your walls, you know, then you're thinking about what they're thinking, you know, so it is a spiral. It's hard to get out of. What is that saying? Paralysis by analysis. You know, so
oh, yes.
I mean, it happens, you know, it's happened to me where I'm sitting there and I'm an overthinker. That's one of my weaknesses. I feel like, you know, I overthink certain situations and it can be a good and a bad thing. But for the most part, you know, if it's something that needs to happen right away, that can happen, especially during the imposter syndrome cycle.
Very true. I mean, and when you think about the coaching aspect, right? So you mentioned earlier, like different levels, like individual mm-hmm. contributor all the way to C-suite.
Yes.
There's usually some component of mindset in there. Mm-hmm. In the coaching, right? It may not show up initially. They may not even realize that that's the component, but a lot of times the biggest battle is the one we face in between the ears.
Right. No, that's a very good point. Well, thank you for that. I do appreciate the information on that. So when you are working with these companies for Franco IAO Consulting, what consulting practices do you give to these Fortune 500 companies and high-level clients?
So I can actually do anything within a talent lifecycle. Okay. So I'll start with the broad and then I'll kind of narrow down to specialties and those types of things. So when I think about talent, right, you go from hire to retire, exit, you know, entry to exit kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I've helped organizations with everything from recruiting, interview prep, right types of interviews, how to align core values of the organization to your interview questions, how to identify growth versus fixed mindset, those types of things, right? And then from there, how do you onboard an individual that they can create a brag-worthy experience where they start to promote your business and your organization to their friends from the whatever company they left, right? How do you help them acclimate to the role quicker so they can become, you know, efficient and they can gain some confidence that they're providing back and getting, you know, adding value back, because everybody wants to add value. And then from there, it's like, what are the types of learning, knowledge, skills, and abilities that are needed for each role, for each level, if you're early versus mid-career, late career, those types of things? How do you assess competency, proficiency? Like we've created very custom assessments on how to do that, how to track, you know, organizational strengths, organizational opportunities that should be addressed year over year. So you could really focus in on the right learning every year. And then we do things like accelerants, like how do you move people into leadership type roles? How do you prepare them in advance, right? How do you create subject matter experts in key critical knowledge areas, whether that's like, let's say a rocket engineer in some cases that I've worked with, right? And those types of things. Or, you know, in particular, material handler or something like that, that's very critical to the success of the organization. And then ultimately, how do you transfer knowledge? So there's no one person hoarding all the information. And if they leave, if they retire, if anything like that, you're not losing a step because of it. So you create this culture of sharing knowledge and building each other up, right? So there's all these different components. There's assessments that we were able to do. There's, you know, toolkits and all this type of thing. All that being said, I can help with all that. We've done HR for HR type stuff. What I really love is helping organizations with attrition issues. And I love leadership type stuff. And, you know, I'll explain why, right? So I mentioned my origin story started with a really bad manager, a really bad situation. That's kind of why I always say my mission in life is, you know, eliminate negative attrition due to crappy managers and poor talent structures. Like, I don't want people leaving an organization because of the manager or because the structure wasn't there to help them grow. That's my goal. Now, could I do all the other stuff? Yes. Do I love it? Yes. It's just, there's not enough time in the day sometimes, and my time is limited. I'm not looking to, you know, be this huge organizational company that has hundreds and hundreds of employees. I'm really looking to make an impact with a small group of people that we have.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. How long on average are you usually with companies? I'm sure it differs each time, but and depending on what you're working on with them, but how on average, how long are you with one of these companies?
It varies depending on the complexity of what they're dealing with, those types of things. But like, let's say we'll take attrition. So if somebody comes to me and they say, we're trying to fix attrition, right? Usually it's going to be at least 6 months because there's an assessment understanding. There's, okay, what are we working with? What are the strengths right now that we can build upon? What are the things we got to go fix? Let's go fix them. Let's assess if it's working. Right. And so there's different health assessments and like that you can go do. Even with like leadership pipelines like that, you're probably looking at least 3 months. So I'd probably say on average, most clients are between 3 to 6 months, 3 or 6 months. But I've had a few that have gone a year or longer, again, depending on the size of the organization. It's very different if they have 300 employees versus, you know, 3,000 employees.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, great. So how can listeners connect with you and actually learn more about Franco.io consulting? And, you know, if businesses need your services, how can they connect with you?
Well, for sure, give them my email address, phone number, that type of thing, right? So Franco.io consulting.com is my website. You can schedule a call with me there. Reach out to me at eric@iofranco.com and my email, and then or my cell. And I'm happy to, you know, just have a initial discussion about kind of what you're experiencing. Many times, honestly, I could just give a few tips and you're off and running and you really don't need to buy my services, right? Mm-hmm. That's another big thing. I don't like to just have somebody purchase my services for no reason. My goal and the goal of my team is always to teach how to do things so we don't have to be there long term. Right. So then we can go work that next one. So feel free to reach out. And honestly, if they want to reach out, mention that they were on the podcast, I'm helping to, you know, give them 15% off on any of the packages, coaching all the way up to consulting. And if they'd like the white paper on the mindset component, I'm happy to provide that to them as well.
Perfect. I'll make sure that's in the show notes and all of the postings as well. This has been great, Eric. I really appreciate everything, all the insight you've shared. I do have one more question before we go. What advice would you give to existing and emerging leaders looking to either become better leaders or be better leaders within their organizations?
Study and appreciate who you are. I think it starts there. We get too ingrained in measuring ourselves with others, right? Whether that's a role, whether that's somebody successful in a role, that type of thing. And there is no one right approach to any kind of growth or development or to get to any kind of path, career path. And so I think the first and foremost, you have to appreciate who you are and really leverage the strengths that you provide and kind of map out your plan based on you.